Here's a question for you. What do you think of when I say, where do you belong? Belonging is what happens when you find your footing someplace and you know that you're there and you know that's your place in the world. So imagine that you're the daughter of a Korean immigrant mother and a white father. And imagine you are in the United States in a landscape that for a long time has been profoundly white and oriented profoundly around white people, especially in spaces of faith. What kind of stories would you think you would tell? Our guest today, Tasha June, is in that particular space. And so in our conversation today, we talk about her book, Tell Me the Dream Again, and we talk about what it means to inhabit and belong to the middle spaces, where you don't know where you really belong until you finally find your way. Just a little note about this episode, we did have some audio problems at the beginning, so if you'll please stick with that, it does clear up early on in the interview. I'm not sure what happened, but you know, technology, it's a wonderful thing. Now here's my conversation with Tasha June.
Tasha, we were talking on what's a beautiful Midwestern day, and I've gotten to know that you are also in the Midwestern circle now. So I feel like there's so much we already share. that it was just a great starting point to know there's some things between Indiana and Illinois we have in common. But thank you for the gracious gift of your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm curious for you, because the podcast is about restlessness, I'm curious for you how that word sits with you today. This is the beginning of a week, and I'm wondering how this word comes to you, how it strikes you, what it does in you when you hear it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think, you know, as a parent watching my parents watching my kids grow and become includes a lot of restlessness. And I don't know if you feel like this too, but I feel like I want them to kind of get from A to B. And I kind of, you know, want to almost rush them to things, or I want to fix things that are in their lives. And I think watching them grow over time and kind of being in the middle of it with them just brings up a lot of restlessness in me. Cause it's an in-between kind of middle space, you know, parenting. It's hard to, I guess, kind of stay still. At least for me, it's hard for me to stay still in that spot. So with them freshly home and us all kind of being smashed together again in a good way, there it's brought up a lot of restless feelings. So yeah, I think that's the most, that's the freshest way that it's been coming up for me.
The language of middle spaces is something that has come up. I'm glad you mentioned that. It's come up before on this podcast, but also in spiritual direction sessions that I've been in, either my own or with someone else. It feels like that's so much a part of life in general, but also a life of faith, that you find yourself in between two things, both of which are important. You feel like you're not choosing between good and evil. You're choosing between great and great, or good and good. And like when you're stuck in between, especially with your kids, there's a sense that that's a part of not only parenting, but it's part of marriage. It's part of work. Right. Integrating that into your life, how do you see those in-betweens coming out in other places for you, whether it's in your faith or your formation? How have those middle spaces shown up in other parts of your life?
Yeah, a lot. I think it's something that I've either been wrestling with or very aware of since a very young age. And it's a lot of kind of what the book is about that I wrote. But I mean, my mom is a Korean immigrant, grew up in Korea. And then my dad is white, Caucasian. He grew up in California. And so from a very young age, I was very aware of just kind of being in this middle middle space culturally. And that was a very normal thing. But as I grew up, I think that that was something that I really wanted to kind of be able to define, or I wanted it to feel a little more solid than it did as I moved through the world. And so I think that is something that has always been really familiar to me. And then along with that, kind of just being a family that moved a lot, middle space again, it just felt like we were in between, you know, this location or that one, you know, leaving, saying goodbye and saying hello. You know, so those things have always felt very, very close to home, almost to the point where when something has started to feel a little bit more stable or less, even though, you know, I don't think it ever really leaves us, right? As we're moving forward, as we're becoming, but when something has felt a little bit more stable, I've thought something was wrong because I was so used to that feeling of just being transitional or in between two things that I was really aware of. So yeah, it's something that is always close. And yet it's still hard for me as a parent. So yeah.
Yeah. So you, in the book that we're talking about today, one of the ways that you're referred to in your bio is as a storyteller. And I really enjoy that, not only because I think we all love good stories, but we talked a bit before we came on to the recording, about how transparent storytelling is, especially when it's autobiographical. When it's more the book that you wrote, Tell Me the Story Again, is it's a memoir feeling kind of book wrapped around different particular questions and conversations. But it's a memoir kind of book. Where was the line for you between saying, I want to write about my development and growth, and I want to write some things that are really difficult and transparent that have to do with my family, that have to do with some challenges and things that I grew up with. And if you can talk about those challenges, that would be great. But where did you find yourself crossing that line of, okay, I'm going to say this.
Yeah. With this particular book and a lot of the stories in them, I mean, some of them kind of can exist on their own. And then of course, all together, they're woven together in this book, but, it really felt for a very long time, like, kind of like Maya Angelou said, it's, you know, that if you have an untold story inside of you, that can be really painful kind of holding on to that. And so for me, a lot of these things felt like something that I was holding on within, and they for lack of a better way to describe it, that they really just wanted to come out into the open, that there was some healing to be experienced by bringing them out into the open. And one thing that I like to say a lot that I think is that storytelling is a practice and can be a practice of hospitality and generosity. Not that we have to share all of our stories, but that a lot of times some of the ones that we offer out, that we choose to offer out, they can be something that welcomes other people and their stories in. And so for me, these are the stories that I just physically felt wanted to come out of me in this way. And then also made the choice, the conscious decision to use these stories as something that I hoped and I hope still will invite others in, where my story like crosses with, you know, other people's stories or my mom's story. You know, we've had conversations over the last, you know, few decades about what parts of her story can I share. And actually this book started in a college class, you know, over 20 years ago in a memoir class that I took. And it was in that class where I first started kind of writing what this book would become. And much of it, I hadn't lived yet. So it wasn't time, you know, for it to be finished. It was kind of like a short story memoir at that time, but it's kind of been sitting with me since and growing over time. So, and back then, even talking to my mom, you know, her words were, you have permission to share anything that I've shared with you. And I think in a similar way, as she verbally shared stories with me, it was this, this release, I guess, for her. And then in the ways that those stories, you know, are so connected with mine, even though we've grown up completely differently, it's become a release and a form of healing, but also hospitality for me. So yeah, it felt like an overflow, but it also felt very much like a choice that I made with each chapter, you know, each story that was, you know, typed into Word. So, yeah.
And I apologize. I've got your book laying right here in front of me, and I must have had Storyteller in my brain. The title of the book is actually Tell Me the Dream Again. I said, Tell Me the Story Again. I'm so sorry. I was on a story jag and just went with it. I think that that's something that writers especially, and I've heard several people talk about this, about how do you step into that ground where you're going to say some things about people that you love that need to be said, but you know that it's, you're opening a door that probably won't ever be closed. Right. And you can gain permission and you can have conversations, but once it's out there in the world and the book becomes its own thing and you just sort of bless it and send it on its way, it does have different implications that take shape. And for you, I'm wondering the implications of telling, because memoir, I think good memoir has a balance of telling the story of how you experience something that may be a negative reflection on someone else, but also telling the story in a way that you see how your own actions. So I think back to those in-between places we were talking about, it seems like the stories you tell have an equal amount of, this was really difficult for me to experience from outside. This person did this and here's how I experienced it. And we as the reader are like, oh, that's terrible. Why would they do that? And then you say, and this is how I responded. And I looked at myself and said, why did I do that? So memoir has that equal balance of this happened to me, of subject and object, I guess. You know, I was the person who experienced this and then I acted as a result. I have to imagine that doing that with actual experiences in your life changed something in you. How did writing this book and telling these stories form you? How did it shape you?
You know, some chapters were really, I don't want to say easy to put on the page, but some of them I had shared in other spaces multiple times or talked with other people, processed through a lot. And so those didn't feel difficult to put, you know, to shape. I'm sure the actual writing of it, you know, weaving it together with the other stories did form me. But it felt those chapters felt a little bit more empowering. Like I had taken a step away. It didn't feel so raw, and it felt like I can voice this, knowing who I am, knowing the things that I regret, the things that that were painful, and I can use it and see it be used for good. There were a few chapters that were difficult to work through. And I noticed immediately, just, I mean, my body's, you know, cues to me as I was writing, just feeling like, you know, I'd write a chapter and I'd just sit there and just stare at the screen, not really writer's block, but it just was exhausting. And it felt like I need to go take a break. I need to go get some more coffee, get some more water, you know, just feeling like, gosh, there's something happening here as I revisit, you know, some of these memories and kind of bring myself back into that space where I really felt like I was going to have to go slowly and be gentle and go through it, you know, and ask God for help. Not to just wrap it up, but like, this was something that we were experiencing together. This was a chance at intimacy or wrestling, not necessarily with positive feelings all the time, but just, you know, and so in those chapters, it felt like, I guess wrestling, it felt like I was wrestling through those things again. And not that I wasn't supposed to open them up or anything like that. It just felt like a little bit more of like wading through the mud, going back and forth with God, like about some of the things that had happened and what parts I'm supposed to put, you know, on the page. And asking myself, am I ready to do this with this part? And, you know, kind of, so it took a little bit longer with a couple of chapters. And so I guess just depending on what I was writing about, it was different, you know? So, I think it formed me. I guess, you know, I really feel like what it did and what writing can so often do is just this, it just keeps bringing up a mirror. And you either face it or you don't, and you just stop writing. You know, I don't know. It's like, you kind of can't go around it. And so, it was humbling, but I think it was also just, more opportunities to peel back layers. You know, I often think of myself as so vulnerable, and yet through different things, God continues to peel back layers and kind of like, you know, there's so many, it's like an unending, you know, onion or whatever you want to say. I think that the writing of this was humbling. I think it was also, it was something that I think required and, asked for more tenderness, in me, you know, for, you know, as I faced myself, but also as I thought about who might be reading and the people that I was writing about, you know, just wanting to be more gentle and tender. And I already thought that I was, so I think that was a whole nother piece to it.
The subtitle to the book is Reflections on Family, Ethnicity, and the Sacred Work of Belonging. That last phrase is something that's always been very close to my heart. Mm-hmm. As someone who grew up in the South and had so much of South part of the United States and had such an identity from that, implicit and explicit things I was taught and things that were just handed down that some of them I've realized I didn't want and didn't know they were being handed down. Mm-hmm. So that question of belonging, especially now that I'm moved from the South to the Midwest, and some of those connections with family and traditions are gone. Belonging seems like such a capstone thing, especially for faith, for people of faith. How we are formed is really rooted in where we feel like, if we have that sense of belonging. Much of the book is you working through what does it mean to be the daughter of a Korean mother and a white father, mm-hmm. in the United States. And I'm curious how you feel about the concept of belonging, and what does that way of belonging, what did it look like for you to move into a place where you finally felt like you were grounded and that you belonged?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think I mentioned this before, but, you know, when I was younger, our family makeup, what we were, that was the norm to me. And as a kid, as a young kid, I felt very affirmed at home, you know, in being biracial, being, you know, having a multicultural, bicultural home. And yet when I kind of like moved out into the world, you know, going to school, as we moved from place to place, that's where a lot of that just felt like, it shifted for me. And I felt very unsure about what that all meant as I saw it kind of reflected back at me through others and through things that, you know, weren't necessarily said, but, you know, think of like no representation, like lack of representation in books or media. And so there, it was just really hard. And we talked about this before, popping on, but when we moved to my family, so we moved to Milwaukee, to California. We born in California, sorry, moved to Milwaukee, then to New York. And then we moved to Tokyo, Japan. And that was like my younger formative years of elementary school. And then we moved back to California where I was born. And then right before high school, moved to Indiana. And so most of my childhood was kind of diverse. I mean, Japan was not a diverse, it's not a diverse nation, but the school that I went to was an international school. And so, you know, my classmates, my, you know, what I saw every day felt very diverse at school. And then in California was diverse. And then we moved to, I think it's a city now, but I think it was still a town when we moved to Indiana. And it was the first time I had ever been in a place where I realized right away that I looked different than everyone around me. And I hadn't really thought about it. No one had ever said anything, you know, and I hadn't really thought about it in that way. So for me, I look back and I just see this constant you know, kind of in every place looking for belonging, thinking I maybe found it, but then it would be, everything would get shaken and it would feel like everything came loose. And then when we moved to Indiana, and this was again, right before high school. So a really tender age, a really difficult age, no matter who you are, I think, where you are in the world. But that was kind of when everything kind of just shook loose for me. It was, I didn't know why we were where we were. I left, like, you know, I had this first day of school where people were coming up to me, and usually not with ill intent, but very, in a very uncomfortable way, were asking me, just for, based on my appearance or something they had heard about this new girl, you know, what are you, you know, that the classic, what are you, but also, are you Mexican? Are you Chinese? And I'd never been asked those things before, although I had been asked things about in Japan. You know, I used to say I was an American and that was confusing. So I had some of that, but it was different where, you know, classmates would just walk up to me in the hall and ask me these things. And I was kind of stunned. And so I remember going home and trying to find really baggy clothes. It's just what my brain told me to do, you know, just wanting to hide. And, you know, the years after that were this wanting to belong, but feeling like the only way I could belong is if I didn't stand out. And so I naturally went to hiding, physically, but then also in other ways, like just didn't say much, was very quiet, tried to back of the classroom, like everything you could think of, you know, in each situation, it was a very much a hiding, thinking that if I could hide enough and blend in, I would somehow belong. And that ties to something I wrote about in the book, just with this cultural assimilation, this kind of lie that says that if you assimilate into majority culture, you'll belong, you'll feel like you fit in. And so in my own way, I was doing that without ever being told to do that, without ever really thinking about it. It was just a natural instinct. I think that was, you know, very, very much tied to shame. But anyway, so I thought that if I could hide enough, maybe I could feel like I belong, because I wouldn't feel this uncomfortable sense of not belonging, you know, just this othered standing out that I felt there. So all of that to say, there's been a long search, a lot of ways that I have kind of, you know, gone about searching for belonging and not found it, and kind of have been, you know, just experienced more and more pain as a result. And then if you keep going further and further down, my husband and I had our first child, a lot of what hit me was that a lot of what I felt like I needed to hide was my Koreanness. It was the thing that, you know, I was raised, you know, in a bicultural, biracial home, but my mom, the things that she nurtured me with, you know, from food to care, was in a very Korean way. And that was my norm growing up. And those were the things I started to reject and wanted to hide the most. So I feel like this is a really long answer, but it's all tied to my faith journey, because then, you know, in Indiana, that's when I started going to church and started learning about my faith. And so to bring those two things together and find that both of those things, like the embrace of my faith, but also the embrace of my ethnic identity, that those were very interwoven. And at first I was not taught that. So still tried to hide. And yeah, the finding that those things were interwoven is where I started to gain a lot more grounding and kind of did the work of belonging, the sacred work of belonging. So,
yeah. Hey there, just dropping in for a moment in the middle of this, what was a wonderful conversation with Tasha, but just a note that something interesting is coming on December the 5th. There was a book that I wrote back in 2019 called As I Recall, Discovering the Place of Memories in Our Spiritual Life. And through reasons that you could find out on another episode of this podcast, it's being re-released in paperback and with an audio version on December the 5th. The new title is The Practice of Remembering, Uncovering the Place of Memories in Our Spiritual Life. You can pre-order that now, and you can find a link on my website, or you can go straight to Amazon or Bookshop or wherever you like to get your books. And so I would invite you as a listener to the podcast, would you please go and pre-order a copy of that book? If you already have the 2019 copy, would you pre-order a copy for someone else? It includes also a wonderful foreword by my friend and podcast guest, Marlena Graves. That is really, really helpful. So please, if you would, I encourage you to do that. If the book is helpful to you, leave a rating and a review once you get it, or review it on Goodreads. You can do that anytime. So again, The Practice of Remembering, pre-order now. It goes on sale December 5th. Now, back to the conversation. And I feel one of the lovely things about being able to talk, to have conversations like this with you is people like me who are white tend to center everything that happens into our whiteness. And we believe that that becomes the lens through which everything else should be seen. And you're just amplifying that by saying the way that I would belong is for this part of me to disappear.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is an implicit way that that gets communicated. Mm-hmm. Whether it's just by awkward questions or questions that just don't, and some people are not thinking when they ask it, I'm sure. I'm not excusing. Right. I'm just saying you're just not thinking about what you're about to say. Like, take a beat and maybe deep breath, count to 10. Should I ask this? But there's the other side of it that is so centered in whiteness that you get the worst case scenario is, well, if you're going to be a part of this country, then you have to be blank. And that's just centering it in. But I love the way that you said that, because it brings up something to me that I don't think people think about, which is there is an aspect of our ethnic identity that applies to faith.
Yeah.
That there are theologians, there are writers, there are practices that are rooted in what it means to be Korean and Christian, mm-hmm. what it means to be Indian and Christian, what it means to be, you know, Iraq, anywhere, pick an area of the world, pick an ethnicity. There's something that those two lenses match up. Is there a way you can articulate what it looks like for you to see the intersection of your faith and your Koreanness? Mm-hmm. Are there some mm-hmm. practical implications that makes?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can, I mean, I think this, I'm still being shaped by this in a lot of ways, as I work from just a lifetime of kind of rejection and moving back to embrace and back to this holy curiosity about how God's made me. And I think it's going to be different for me as a biracial Christian than someone who is not biracial. So all that to say, some of the beautiful things that have come along with like journeying back through embrace have just been, you know, and I'll back up a little bit. You know, for a while when I would try to bring up, like when I was younger and I was just growing in my faith, when I would try to bring up with mentors who were incredibly positive in a lot of ways, but when I would try to bring up, you know, something about my cultural upbringing, I think there was a lack of, because it was not a diverse space, you know, it was majority white. There just wasn't always, they didn't know what to do with what I would bring up. And so, and this is tied to now, but a lot of times the response I would get was, well, your identity is in Christ, you know, so it doesn't matter. And so that kind of just kind of reinforced this. I think they meant well, but and I do believe my identity is in Christ, but it reinforced this thing of, well, it doesn't really matter. So either if I care so much about it, there's something wrong with me. Keep thinking about it. But then I think what I've come to understand is that it does matter, like we were just talking about. And so now I can look back and see times where God was pursuing me through food, Korean food in particular. You know, I think I wrote about this in the book I did in Germany when I decided I was living in Germany, worked for a Christian organization at the time, and decided to make this Korean dish that I grew up having for the team that I worked with, but also others that we had met in Germany, other students that we had met. And it was this time I remember really distinctly feeling like the Holy Spirit was with me, and I felt alive as I, you know, kind of reached back and made this food that my mom fed me that my mom and my dad that we had as a family with my sister growing up. And it was really meaningful, but it wasn't just sharing a tradition. It felt like this, it was really clear to me. It was like God was saying, you know, I made you for this. I made you to feed others in this way. And so we can all feed others, right? But it felt like for me, it was feeding them this Korean food with these Korean smells. And again, and it was kind of a redemptive moment because I wasn't ashamed of those particular smells or the way, you know, the grease went everywhere. It just, you know, so that, for example, feels like a really real way that God kind of affirmed my ethnic identity as something given, that was meant to be not on display, like on a shelf, but just, it was very intentional, lovingly intentional, you know, by God. And so that is one example. As a family now, you know, we are a mixed race family. My husband, his ethnic heritage is Scottish, and then a mix of things he's not as much sure about, but for us, we celebrate those things. The Korean part of our mixed heritage is a little bit closer to home because my mom, you know, grew up in Korea, and some of his ethnic heritage is a little bit further back. But at the same time, we're really intentional about trying to bring those things into the mix of our everyday life, you know, not in a forced or dishonest way, but just in a way of like affirming for our kids that it matters. So for me, a lot of that is through food, through language. And I don't speak Korean fluently, but as I get older, certain things that my mom said to me, like little phrases, they just come out now. I don't even think about it. And so just letting that, you know, kind of letting that flow and letting my kids kind of imitate that without thinking, oh, that's going to be weird, you know, if they pick those things up. So just really, in some ways, just letting things be, but also doing some work to kind of make those things available for myself and for our family, but also for our kids. So yeah, I think I went off on a tangent a little.
Not at all. Not at all. No, and that seems to be the mold and the shape of the book. Is every story is a lens into what it means to articulate a life of faith. And a lot of it starts with food. And and that's such a powerful thing in not only your stories, but if we look at the stories of Scripture, food is such a central piece because it's the social, but it's also the sustaining piece. It's cultural. There are so many of the Jesus stories around food are about him either breaking or bending or defying the cultural laws around foods in order to love well. And so I think you can do it from within or from without. Mm-hmm. When you think about this book as a whole and the stories you've been able to tell, giving it to the world, and like I feel like books are trying to make sense of something. It's the writer trying to make sense of where do all these stories fit together. But it's also something that you it's a part of yourself you give away.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what you want the gift of this book to be. What is it that you're giving away to people? And knowing that a lot of it is opening up space for them to say, okay, here's my story, find yourself in this.
Right.
All of my stories.
Right.
But a few that I've curated and selected because I feel like they are a lens into whether it's helping them see what it's like to be a Korean American. And person of faith, and what that feels like to feel like you're on the outside of things. And you have to. So for you personally, I mean, is there a particular gift you were hoping that this book would give to people? And how does that play out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, there are two things that feel really clear to me, and hopefully there are more outside of that. But I really hoped that by being really specific, by kind of digging deep into, you know, the things that I think would be really easy to just gloss over, to you know, push aside about, yes, very specific about my biracial Korean American ethnicity and faith journey. I hope, though, that when people read that, kind of like you already said, that it would kind of illuminate every reader their own story, that it would maybe give another perspective if they don't share these same details, and maybe deepen some empathy, but also like illuminate their own story and give people permission to think about where they feel, again, if we go back to restless, where they feel restless in some of these areas and have maybe learned to just shove it away, or where there's longing or ache, give people permission to go there and kind of explore that, whether that's in their past memories or currently, and let God meet them in that. Because I really believe that God wants to, is present in those things, has something to offer us in those spaces. Of just desire for belonging. I think we were made for belonging. We were created to belong, you know. But I think that a lot of these things, and maybe some of it is cultural, a lot of it maybe, but just we're told that we don't always have permission, I guess, to explore those aches, those pains, and have the chance to take a risk in opening it up and finding out is God really there? Like, can we have that doubt? Can we have that open space where we offer some of that? And that can be scary, but I hope that this book will give people permission to do that. And And then, I mean, there have been a couple of things that have happened since where, you know, I had someone write that they had been waiting, you know, 30 years for a book like this, and they happened to be Korean American. But just having someone write about the experience of wanting to belong, but also the faith aspect, because I think that I've read some that are in, you know, maybe talk about the Korean American experience or a lack of belonging or just a lot of the issues that are brought up, or faith, but not as much together, which I think has been my biggest wrestle. But I just wanted to put it out there so that if anyone has something similar, that they can feel like they're not alone, but also that they have permission to move through that in an honest way.
Yeah. I'm just grateful that you did it. I'm grateful the way that you've been transparent. There were a couple stories that really, I there was one I read and I thought, I bet that was difficult. It's the story about your mom and the soup that's typically prepared for women after they have a baby. Yeah. And I read that and thought, oh gosh, that I wondered if that, when you were talking earlier about just sitting there going, that was exhausting. I wondered if that was one of those stories where you finished and were like,
whew. Yeah. That one actually, so I had written about that before. I had written that out before. So that one felt like something I could offer at the time with the book freely. But when I went through that, it was really hard. When I went to the bookstore and read about the significance of myeogguk or seaweed soup and realized how much I had rejected just the weight of it, that was hard to work through. And it took, I mean, it was years later that I finally started processing through that in an open way, you know, and writing about it. But yeah.
And I'm not going to go into detail because I really want people to actually go read the story, but I am grateful for, it's just, that's one of those places where I was grateful for that's such an entry into your life and your experience, and also the way that you are processing what faith means in this journey. And I hope the gifts that you want to offer, I hope those are apparent to people. But for me, the gift for me was the ability to say, There are bigger aspects to the journey of faith than just what it looks like to be a white American trying to make sense of God in my own existence, and that there are stories elsewhere that are rich and full and deep and abiding and helpful. And so you provided so many of those. So thank you for doing that. If for no other reason, I thank you personally, but I have a feeling people who read this will feel the same.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. Yeah, that means a lot.
Tasha June is a biracial Korean-American melancholy dreamer. She grew up in a multicultural home, and because of that, she spent her life navigating cultural collisions and liminal space. She writes about faith, cultural and ethnic identity, and living with a shalom sick, I love that word, a shalom sick ache. Writing has always been the way God has led her through pain and toward the hope of shalom. Tasha lives in the Midwest with her husband and three kids. Her book, Tell Me the Dream Again, Reflections on Family, Ethnicity, and the Sacred Work of Belonging is available now. There's a link in the show notes. You can click there and get a copy of this wonderful book. I highly recommend it. Today's podcast was recorded by me, Casey Tigrett, author of The Gift of Restlessness, which is what gave birth to this whole podcast thing. If you'd like to find a copy of that, you can wherever you buy books. The artwork for today's episode, for all of our episodes, is provided by Broadleaf Books, my publisher. Thank you, guys. And the music for today's episode is provided by my dear friend, Robert Ebbins. You can find out more about his work on the show notes or in the show notes as well. So may you find the place where you belong. May you find the beauty of those middle spaces, those restless spaces, as they teach you what belonging really means. And may you find the dream that keeps you going. Until next time, be well. Peace, friends.